Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Welcome to our host, Susan Franzen.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike. Last week, we featured celebrations with tree lighting in Story City, Boone, and Nevada. So it may seem that such community celebrations are over. My curiosity led me to explore Facebook pages where I discovered Ogden's traditional candy cane lane. And after calling to down to Ogden, what I learned was that, yes, it's going to take place this Saturday. And the one feature that is really special there is that they're going to have horse-drawn sleigh rides. And anybody who's there and signs on and that they have room for can go on a sleigh ride. So that's pretty neat. They, you know, also have the tree and so forth. But while we're still on events for this coming weekend, I found that we have two Christmas plays. One's really unusual one coming up this weekend. And so I always like to do cover community theater when I can and when the timing is right. And so I called Dan Chase in the Ankeny Community Theater, who's here with us, to introduce us to their warm-hearted story called Geezers. Hi, Dan.
Good morning, Susan.
Yeah.
Geezers indeed.
Why did ACT choose this for a Christmas play?
Well, you know, I'm not real sure it came out actually as a Christmas play. It just happened to fall in the season this way.
It is a really warm-hearted slice of life type play, talking about the connections that we all have with each other. Especially talking about older folks dealing with each other and aging, and it's a very tender look at the times, and I think that fits really well with the season of giving of ourselves and giving of each other.
Okay, now I presume that you are a geezer, is that right?
Yeah, I am a geezer. as interesting as that may sound. Yep, I'm one of us. There are four main geezers in the show. It takes place at a senior center, a senior living facility, and we all kind of get to know each other, and so we all have known each other and lived together for quite a while. And we introduce a young man named Jack, who's just recently lost his mother, and he's kind of isolated, and he has never really lived. And all of a sudden, he's thrown into this community of senior citizens, affectionately called the geezers. And we get to know each other and help him kind of move his way down the aging line.
Now, just how old is he to get to join the geezers?
Well, he's played in his mid-30s. He has been a caretaker for his mother his entire life. And it hasn't had much social interaction at all. He prefers to be a writer in that he doesn't have to then interact with the rest of the world. And so there's a lot of firsts for him in this show as he gets to come. We bring him out of his shell a little bit.
How did you find this play?
Well, you know, I'm not really a member of the board at Ankeny Community Theater as we get to. But I think the process was that they've actually booked two of this playwright's plays for this year's season. This year the playwright is Tommy Lee Johnston, and they're doing Geezers, and then later on in the season they're doing a production of Aura, A-U-R-A, Aura, by Tommy Lee Johnston as well. Interestingly enough is that Tommy is going to come see the show on Saturday night, this opening Saturday night, the 4th, and then there will be an author talk back, an opportunity to discuss some of the thematic material with Mr. Johnston after the production.
Oh, why? Too bad we can't catch that.
Yeah, that would be fun. I'm looking forward to it myself. I've been doing this show now for about 8 weeks, and I've got some questions for Mr. Johnston.
Well, where is it, and when is it, and is there anything special we should know about getting tickets or anything?
Well, tickets are available at Midwest Tix. The phone number for that is 515-244-2771. The show opens Friday night, and we're Friday, Saturday, this weekend at 7:30, and then a Sunday matinee at 2:00. And then next weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30, and another Sunday matinee at 2:00 on the 12th.
So
tickets are available at Midwest Tix, or you can go to the Ankeny Community Theater website, which is ankenycommunitytheater.com, and theater spelled with an R-E at the end.
I remember when I was first in a theater group after I grew up, and I was in Ames, it was a women's theater group, and they were spelling their name that way, and I'd never seen it spelled like that, and I thought that they were making it up. I didn't realize that's the way it's always done by real theater groups.
Well, I'm kind of a word geek anyway, but my understanding is that when you spell it T-H-E-A-T-R-E, that's the theater company, and you spell it T-H-E-A-T-E-R, and that's the actual building you're in. Whether that's true, that's just what I've been told.
Well, no, that clears up something for me. So I now know when it's correct to spell it the other way.
I learn something every day, don't we, Susan?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess you have plenty of tickets. And what about things like distancing? I would think that would be really, really hard in the
Yeah, we're a very, very small theater space. We only seat between 80 and 90 people. So social distancing will be very, very difficult for us. We are requiring people to wear a mask when they come into the building. The cast has been fully masked when we're in rehearsal and backstage. I know all of the staff and crew will all be masked. Just trying to keep everybody as safe as we possibly can. So we just started taking our masks off to work on stage just this week for dress rehearsals.
So, okay, well, that's good to know.
By all means.
Right, that's good, and good for the audience to know. I presume you'll have disposable masks if anybody forgets or doesn't have one.
Yes, indeed. We don't want anybody to miss this. It's been so much fun doing this production. It's Geezers kind of sounds humorous, you know, when you listen to the title, it's, oh my God, it's going to be a comedy. Well, it does have funny moments just like life does. And it's the old, the movie line, you'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll leave the theater humming tunes. Well, there aren't any tunes, but you definitely will laugh and cry in this show.
Okay. Well, thanks for telling us about it and for being in it. Sounds like a really wonderful addition to the long list of successful plays from ACT.
Well, thank you so much for having us this morning, Susan. Thanks for the opportunity to spread the good news. We appreciate that.
Well, it's our pleasure.
You have a wonderful day today, Susan, and thank you again.
For those of you who are just tuning in, we've been talking with Dan Chase and Ankeny about their unusual Christmas special. He said it's not really a Christmas play at all, but it happened at this time of year, called Geezers. But Ankeny isn't the only theater with a play occupying the first weekend in December. Boone Community Theater is presenting a musical version of Little Women, A Merry Christmas, by Mary Chase, no relationship to Dan. It has a large cast, in part because they double cast the four principals. But even so, this production is outstanding for its geographical inclusiveness, with cast members from Boone, Madrid, Ames, and Ogden. The director of Little Women is Michelle Levi, who spoke to me last week about why she selected it.
Where did you find the script?
Several years ago, I did another version of the show, and so when the idea came up about a year ago to do this, the show again, I just started searching for scripts that interested me. I wanted to do a musical version, but I didn't want to do the Broadway spectacular musical version. I wanted a little more down-to-earth version of the show. So I went to the company that we used when we did Anne with the Eat, the Anne of Green Gables musical we did several years ago, and I just read a couple scripts that they had. One of them was a play version, and the other one was this musical version. When I started reading the play version, I wasn't real excited about it, but then I read through the musical version that we're doing, and I just loved it. So I guess that was the process.
Well, a play that you love is always a good one to be producing.
Exactly. Well, I love the story a lot. That's why I decided to direct it again. The last time I directed it was for a homeschool group. Well, we actually have quite a few in the cast. We double cast the four Little Women. So each of the Little Women, like two nights, it'll be one cast, and then a night and a matinee, it'll be the other cast. So we just had so many show up for auditions. We wanted to give them all a part, and we weren't be able to cast everyone, but almost everyone that showed up. So it's been fun. You know, they portray it a little differently. So each time, you know, even if people come to see it more than once, they'll see a different show because of different casts. So the other parts besides the four main Little Men are all those aren't double cast. Just the four, Meg, Joe, Beth, and Amy are the only parts double cast.
And what are the other parts?
Well, we have Marmee, who's the mom. On the end of the show, we see the dad who comes back from the war. We also have Aunt March, who's the crazy old aunt who loves the family but is very critical of the family. But she's, you know, kind of a cranky woman but a dear woman. And then we have Mr. Lawrence, who's the neighbor grandfather, and then of course Lori, the young man who he lives with his grandfather, and he comes to get to know these young ladies and just enjoys being with them. So let's see. Oh, and then we have some small parts that are like their carolers and their skaters. We have a scene where they're at an ice skating rink. Well, actually ice skating pond, not rink. And then Hannah, the maid. In our portrayal, she's younger than probably normal. But she's a dear woman who has helped raise these young ladies, and I believe that's all the parts.
It's a nice play to have a lot of parts.
Yes.
Now, of course, one of the advantages of being double cast is, at this time of year, you may have somebody come down with a flu or something.
Yeah,
so you can still go on if that happens.
Exactly. Yes. So far, that hasn't been a problem, but you know, we still have a backup if something happens.
So, is there anything special about the musical? How are you handling the backup music?
We have a pianist. We actually have Pam Grunstad opening night, who was the former music teacher in Boone. And then the Friday and both performances on Saturdays, actually my son, who has a degree in music, is coming from Fort Dodge to play the piano.
Are there any really spectacular numbers?
Well, they're not, I wouldn't call them spectacular. I would call them endearing. They're really, like, they're not going to be well-known songs. Or in fact, we have some carols in it, but they're kind of old-fashioned carols. They're not well-known carols, but they're just really enduring. The girls have a couple really neat songs, and Marmy sings a solo song that's really exciting. And Lori has a very, Lori, the young man, has an enduring song to encourage Joe when her sister is very ill. So there's some really neat songs, but they're not like, Broadway spectacular songs. They're just very enduring, I guess is the best way to describe them.
Why did you decide to do it on just one weekend?
Well, partially because that's when since we're still on the move and don't have our own space, that was the only time the church that we're using was available. They had something else next weekend, so we weren't able to do it on that weekend. I guess that's the main reason. Just that this is the only time we could find a time to and a place to perform it.
Parking problems or
no? The Evangelical Free Church in Boone, where we're performing, has a back entrance, and so we perform actually on a stage that's in their multipurpose room. There's lots of parking. You just have to go around the back of the church, and there's lots of parking. There's lots of space. It's a very large room, so we should, have room for everyone that wants to come. And it's a great place. We've done several shows here, and we really like the space.
Are there any special things people have to do? Are you asking your audience to be masked or distanced or anything like that?
We don't have any requirements, just whatever they're comfortable with. If they're more comfortable with the mask, they, of course, can come with a mask. And we don't have any.
Those plays take place this next weekend, but there's another cultural event that is taking place that we need to bring to our listeners' attention. Normally, when there's a production by the Central Iowa Symphony, we feature it and often have the musicians. We used to, when we could all be in the studio, we sometimes had them come in, especially for the children's concerts. This one, you couldn't bring anybody in, but I do have an announcement from the conductor, Eric McIntyre, that I will let you know what's coming up. This is going to be this Saturday, December 4th, in the City Hall Auditorium. It is called Beyond the Bees. A reference to the great bees of music immediately brings to mind the iconic contributor iconic contributions of Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms. But the list goes on well beyond these three masters. Our December concert celebrates six other bees in a sonic voyage through almost 300 years of music and a stunning collection of brilliant color, harmony, and melody. And he then adds, I look forward to seeing you Saturday, December 4th, 7:30 p.m. in the Ames City Auditorium for Beyond the Three B's. And so that's just a heads up so you know what's going to happen if you don't happen to be at one of the theater productions. Or maybe you can, those have other nights, so. And I'd like to welcome my co-host, Gina McAndrews. She is really, really faithful. I sent her a script for getting that. She had told me she couldn't be here this week, and she is with us from the airport.
Hello, Susan. How are you?
I'm fine. Where is your airport this time?
I'm in Des Moines right now. I'm going to fly to West Palm Beach, Florida for a class I'm taking for a few days.
You're going to be taking a class in West Palm Beach. Well, hope to have good weather while you're there.
Well, I won't see too much of the weather except going out of the class and into the class because it goes about 10 hours for the whole day. So we start about 9 or 30 in the morning and go till about 8 or 9 at night. But it should be fun.
Well, good.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, places, and events in Central Iowa. We are your hosts, Gina McAndrews and Susan Franzen. We're continuing with the theme from last week, the fate of the newspapers in a digital age.
Des Moines Register, they just stripped down their staff. They got rid of all but one columnist. They reduced the number of reporters they had. And most strikingly, they got rid of Kathy Obradovich, who was the editor of the editorial page. And we have a recorded comment on that from Mark Witherspoon, who was at the time the faculty sponsor of the Iowa State Daily, explaining what Kathy Obradovich did when she left the Des Moines Register. She started the Iowa Capital Dispatch, and we'll have a little description of that from Mark Witherspoon. So let's get back to Kathy Obradovich.
Uh-huh.
So when she left the Register as editor of
the opinion page, yep.
And took this new venture, you understand the venture. Could you describe this a little bit? So is this strictly opinion, or is this mostly news?
Oh, no. It's going to be mostly right. Well, the people she has, the beautiful thing about Kathy is everyone, she is one of the most respected journalists in the state, and if not the nation. And so she kind of stole some very good reporters, Clark Kaufman, Lynn Ta, some very good reporters from the Register. And so they are going to be doing reporting, and they'll be covering social issues that are important to the community. It's not going to be, in fact, I don't know how much is actually going to be opinion, if any at all. Because Kathy, I think her first love is also political reporting. So, she will be doing probably a lot of reporting too. There probably will be some, opinion, but knowing Kathy, it will be all that will be, and the first stories we've seen, are real depth stories, about issues that are affecting the community.
And anybody can get this, right? Just by signing up?
Oh, yeah, just signing up, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
How do you think that this will affect journalism at large? She says, you know, these will be stories will be available to any newspaper that wants them.
Well, it's going to provide more reporting. The reason there's not as much news is the inability to maintain the number of reporters who are reporting for your newspaper. That is the one thing that is probably the most important as far as you don't have as much news coming out of the newsroom anymore as you did when you had more money to pay more reporters. Okay, so you don't have any more reporters. That right there is going to decrease the amount of news stories you have. So the fact that you have nonprofits like Kathy's nonprofit coming up and doing stories helps tremendously, at least increasing the number of stories that people have to read. And when you have the quality of reporters that she has at her nonprofit, you're going to have very good stories coming out of that newsroom.
So talking about the general situation that news of all kind is in right now. I was really inspired with the Ogden Reporter. The Ogden Reporter is a paper I'm currently getting because in my building, there are a number of people from Ogden. And when I get my paper, the Des Moines Register, delivered to my door, thanks to actually a cooperation of the members, the Register delivers a stack of papers, and then members deliver both the Des Moines Register and the Ames Tribune. There were some doors that had copies of the Ogden Reporter. I think they got them in the mail, and then they were passing them around to each other. And I said, I was interested in seeing them when they were through with them. So I've been reading the Ogden Reporter, which is very definitely not part of the Gannett and Gateway conglomerate. Because what I noticed, I mentioned it last week, was that the same stories were popping up in the local papers and the Ames paper and the Des Moines Register. And while that may be good for your publicity, if you're have a new restaurant in Jewel, for example, it's not very much local news. And so I started exploring that last week. And what I found was, yes, it's certainly not a local, these aren't local papers anymore, but that there were some benefits. And so I began looking at some of those. And just out of curiosity, I wondered if the Ogden Reporter had an online presence. That's actually why Marlis Barker quit the Nevada Journal. And now the Nevada Journal doesn't have an editor anymore, nor does the Tri-County Times, nor does the Story City Herald, nor. And this is really a surprise when I looked inside to see, nor does the Ames Tribune. In exploring this a little bit, I had got an explanation of this from then supervisor, sponsor, faculty sponsor for the ISU Daily, Mark Witherspoon. Mike, could you play that clip from Mark Witherspoon?
Newspapers are now online. So everything from the Nevada Journal and the Tri-County Times have to be online. And so that's a different level of work. So in addition to laying out the paper and getting it out, and you have to worry about having it also up online at the same time.
Yes, that's the huge difference is online and Twitter, which go hand in hand, essentially. Whereas a reporter would go cover a city council meeting or a lecture or something like that, and the reporter would have, an hour, 2 hours to write the story afterward, and then they would put that story in the paper, and it would be published the next day. Now, if you're a reporter covering a city council meeting, you're tweeting out what happens as it's happening. So you're essentially writing your story as it's going. So the reflection that you get by coming back and writing the story after you have gotten back to the newspaper is gone to a large extent. So your ability to kind of sit and ponder about what your lead is going to be or what's the most important thing that needs to be told. Things like that, the time has shortened as far as getting that out online or on Twitter. However, for newspapers who still have a daily or a weekly print product, you still have that time. But what you're doing is essentially writing bits of the story as that lecture is going on, as the city council is making decisions. And so you have little bits of the thing that you put together to, when that city council meeting is over with, you push the button and there's your story already, at least your first draft of the story. Now, you can always come back and make it fuller, more depth, more reasons behind why those decisions were made and all that. You can still do that, but the time that you have to do that is just not there anymore. The other thing that has happened, and really behind the scenes, is our deadlines for getting stories done, deadlines for editing those stories, have been moved backwards. I mean, your deadlines used to be, your final deadline was like 11:30 midnight for a morning paper. And now your deadline is more, depending on what the story is, could be in the afternoon, or if it's a story that happens later, could be an 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock deadline, which also affects the quality and depth of your stories.
What you just said reminds me that there is really a difference between news gathering and opinion pages.
Let's make sure that everybody understands that a newspaper has two functions. One is to inform the people, the readers, the public about what's going on in their communities. Okay, that's one. The other one is to lead the discussion about what people think about what's going on. Okay, so and those to never mix. You have people who are reporters and editors who are responsible for getting the news, the sports, the, you know, arts and entertainment, all that. But then you have an opinion editor or an editorial page. I know they call them different things, but they're responsible for leading the discussion in the community about what's going on in the community. And that's the opinion page. And those sides never mix.
Or they're not supposed to.
Those sides never mix in a responsible newspaper.
Yes.
And I know you have, you know, everyone, I mean, you hear this all the time about people who are, you know, they're prejudiced and they're biased in this area. The real newspapers don't do that and are not that way. And they have their editorial page and their columnist and their who work for the, who write for the editorial page. Those are different from the people who are writing and even doing, opinion, your columnists, who are doing, not political opinion, but just everyday thing. You know, Lee Rude doing the Reader's Watchdog, Dan Finney doing the just his views on life. Those are different than your editorial page. Okay, so you do have some commentary, but it's more commentary about daily life and all that. No, it's not your issues that the community is dealing with.
Thanks to Mark for that description of what it's like to be a reporter these days. I was really a little shocked because I didn't realize the newsroom had changed that much, as well as the other aspects of being online. And so I was eager to talk to a real reporter who actually predates this problem, Laura Balin.
Welcome, Laura. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, how do you look at the proliferation of online information? I guess that yours is a lot of it is online information, isn't it? In Bleeding Heartland.
Yes. I think generally it's positive to have more online news sources. I think that it's rare to have exclusively online sources be as rigorous as some of the ones we have in Iowa. Iowa Capital Dispatch, which is almost 2 years old, they have a full-time staff of four reporters and editors who are churning out a lot of original news content. And I think that that's been a welcome addition to the Iowa media scene, because the number of newspapers that have cut back on their own reporting staff now have more content that they can run through Iowa Capital Dispatch. As you've mentioned, Bleeding Heartland is exclusively an online site, and I'm proud to publish hundreds of articles and commentaries a year that provide a somewhat different perspective from what people can see in their newspaper. But unfortunately, I mean, I don't think that outweighs or fully counterbalances the decline that we've seen in local newsrooms. I mean, a lot of newspapers are operating with a small fraction of the reporting staff that they had 20 or 30 years ago. And the Pew Center is about to come out with a new report on this. It's been a few years. Every few years, they survey newsrooms across the country, and they always see a dramatic decline in the number of reporting of people who are devoted to reporting, and particularly covering local or state politics and government. And that, unfortunately, does diminish what's the ability of the average person to stay informed.
It does. It is amazing what the mix is, however. For example, I mentioned the Ogden Reporter, which you can tell it's a local paper when you pick it up. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got on the front page, it features the doings of the Boone County supervisors. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's front page news. Mm-hmm. It's just in a bar. Make sure that you read that. And I also subscribe to the Boone Republican, mm-hmm. and it doesn't cover board mm-hmm. of supervisors, which they have the same board of supervisors, but mm-hmm. the recovery is better in the reporter. But mm-hmm. if you go through the reporter, you notice that the editorial, they do still have an editorial, and many of the articles are written by the same person. The editor really really has to work hard, and they get some of their stories come from
the Iowa Capital Dispatch.
So that's one place where they get their news. Mm-hmm. And I wondered about what this does to the financing of news. I mean, I presume that they pay something to reprint those articles.
I don't think that they do. I think that the Iowa Capital Dispatch runs on a similar model to the Iowa Watch, which is the Iowa Center for Public Affairs Journalism, where their articles, I think, are available for any newspaper to rerun at no charge. The Iowa Capital Dispatch's funding comes largely from foundations that support the work of it's part of an affiliate, a national affiliate of newsrooms, state-based newsrooms across the country. So I think that that's one of the things about their model. But I mean, the Iowa Capital Dispatch is unusual because they have, like I said, four full-time reporters. I mean, that's more than most newspapers, even the very best smaller newspapers. Like, I don't know if you've seen the documentary Storm Lake, which is available on Iowa PBS online right now. I recommend it to anyone who didn't see it when it was broadcast on Iowa Public Television in November. But the Storm Lake Times is one of the very top small local newspapers in Iowa. And even their entire staff is about 10 people, but that includes everybody, the circulation manager, the person who sells the ads. I mean, the reporting staff is really more like 3 or 4 people who contribute to writing the articles and the commentaries that appear in the paper. So it's just very rare. And the Storm Lake Times is a very robust newspaper compared to what a lot of small towns in that range of 10 to 15,000 residents, a lot of what those towns have, they don't have their own newspaper that's really going out and heavily covering the local council and the county board of supervisors. And Art Cullen, who's the editor in chief of the Storm Lake Times, has said that their editorial policy is if it didn't happen in Buena Vista County, it didn't happen. They try to really focus on the local news because if they try to devote their resources to what's happening at the state level or nationally, they can't add as much value as if they're covering the local stories that nobody else is going to be paying attention to.
I suppose that a lot of local news is dependent on nonprofits. In fact, I understand that Bleeding Heartland for Giving Tuesday, I guess, gave us a suggestion of good news nonprofits to contribute to. Is that right?
Yes, I did. And including KHOI. I mean, I think it is important for Iowans to know that there are nonprofit groups that are supporting this journalism. It doesn't happen for free. People do need to be paid. And even if it's not the readers paying for the news. And it's been a struggle for a lot of news organizations to adjust to the reality that people can access a lot of things online at no cost. And so there's a lot of resistance to paying for news that people feel they should be able to get for free. So I did highlight it in addition to KHOI, highlighted the Western Iowa Journalism Foundation, which is a new group just founded last year and trying to support locally owned newspapers in Western Iowa. Also, Iowa Capital Dispatch and the Iowa Center for Public Affairs Journalism, which do a lot of good work. The Iowa Center for Public Affairs Journalism, they run stories primarily by freelancers. They don't have a full-time staff, but also Iowa Public Radio and Iowa PBS, which used to be known as Iowa Public Television. I think it's really important to preserve those nonprofit sources of news. They do turn out a lot of really good coverage of what's happening around Iowa right now.
Well, I was very surprised when I looked on the online branch of the Ogden Reporter that they had links to all the news stories or programs on Iowa PBS. Mm-hmm. And so it was really an unusual, for me, an unusual thing to have. And they didn't have quite such good online coverage of the local paper, their local paper. As most papers, that's what they do mainly, is they put their paper online. But you could certainly get plenty of good news with your subscription to the Ogden Reporter. So it's a strange world we live in.
And Iowa PBS, even though throughout the day and the evening, a lot of their programming comes from national sources, so the children's educational shows and a lot of the shows in the evenings are nationally produced. They do have some local content, and I think that local content is very important. For instance, the Iowa Press program, which they usually broadcast mm-hmm. on Fridays and then repeat on Sundays, they get a lot of newsmakers to sit down for interviews. And some of those people, like the legislative leaders, they don't make themselves available for press conferences very often. And so for them to sit down and take questions for 20, 25 minutes, unscripted questions, that's unusual and it's valuable. And often those interviews do make news because they get people on the record about topics that otherwise they haven't commented publicly on.
Does Bleeding Heartland, do you have any people who submit stories to you?
Yes, I publish a lot of work by guest authors. I publish more than 100 different guest authors a year. Many of them are more in the commentary or op-ed opinion column mode, but I do have some people who occasionally write for me more like news stories. In fact, I have someone working on one right now, an occasional author who's working on a news issue. So yes, I take guest submissions at Bleeding Heartland, and I'm proud to run a community website that has features a lot of voices. It does tend to focus on the Democratic or progressive side of things, but I also run commentaries, guest commentaries by candidates for office, either local or state or federal offices. So I end up sometimes those pieces give people a window onto races that otherwise they hadn't been following or hadn't heard much about. So yes, I do think it's important to allow for those guest authors and other perspectives.
Also, you have a Twitter feed, don't you? So people can talk back to you. Is that right?
Yes, yes. Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Laura R. Bellin. Yes. There's quite a lot of conversation. I do. Bleeding Heartland also has a Facebook page. So if people comment, I try to react to a lot of the comments on Facebook. I mean, the way it used to be when I started, when I started writing for Bleeding Heartland in 2007, there was much more of a culture of people commenting directly on blogs and websites. There was more of an active comment thread. And over the last 12 years, things have shifted a lot so that a lot of people now will share the article on Facebook or Twitter, and then the commenting happens on those social media platforms. And so that's been a big difference. So I do often, I mean, I don't engage with people who we would call trolls, so people who are not interested in a good faith discussion, but I do often engage with people on Twitter and Facebook who have thoughts to share, or constructive criticisms or suggestions about stories that I've published. And often I encourage those people to submit their own guest commentary if they really, especially if they strongly disagree with something they read on the website. I say I would welcome your take on that, on the same issue.
Well, that's very interesting. And it's a little bit what we discovered last week. It looks like you're shutting down news, and yet many, many more people are getting involved with it. And this is quite surprising.
Well, I do think that the social media has been democratizing. I mean, you can see even the very best known national political reporters, people can talk right back to them on Twitter. And they don't all engage, but some of them do. And so I think that the fact that you can take your comments directly to the reporter, I mean, I think that is one of the positive things about social media. I will say that I am very concerned now, specifically in Iowa, there's a newspaper group, the Lee Newspaper Group, owns several daily newspapers. So the Quad City Times, the Sioux City Journal, the Muscatine Journal, the Mason City Globe Gazette, and the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier. And right now, the hedge fund group Alden is bidding to try to buy a majority stake in Lee Newspapers. And Alden just has a history of taking over newspapers and then just decimating the newsrooms even more than they already have been the last couple of decades. So there's a lot of anxiety right now. The Council Bluffs newspaper, also the Council Bluffs Nonpareil, is another one of the dailies that's owned by the Lee Newspaper Group. So I'm watching that closely, because those newspapers, while they don't have the robust staffs they once did, they still do quite a lot of original coverage of their communities, and they have a lot of shared content across the Lee Newspaper Group. And I would really hate to see any decline in any of those papers, because those cover some major population centers in Iowa.
That is really an important aspect of this. Actually, I became aware of this trend, I don't know, at least 10 years ago, probably longer, when I was friends with an editor of the Ames Tribune. And he told me that already then, that the owners of the Ames Tribune viewed it as a cash cow. Mm-hmm. And so they were, you know, cutting the staff down and cutting every way they could, lowering salaries and so forth, which were pretty rock bottom then, because I remember it used to be kind of a joke, all the mistakes that you could find, just, you know, like proofreading mistakes, mm-hmm. in the Ames Tribune. Of course, spell check has helped that, but as we all know, spell check doesn't always understand synonyms, and they don't always understand. You may have some improvements in your spelling, but you don't, it's not like a good proofreader. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I remember at that time, the editor, I think, viewed his place is to actually weigh in on issues. There was a pretty controversial issue going on. There were a lot of meetings. And he went to them all so that he could, you know, write and keep people aware of what was happening. Mm-hmm. And that's just not part of the job anymore.
Yeah, and really, it's a little bit odd that the editor, you know, normally in a well-functioning newspaper, the editor would assign a reporter to cover a lot of those meetings. I mean, it's good that the editor was trying to cover them himself. But, I mean, some newspapers don't even have a locally based editor anymore. It's very sad. The Burlington Hawkeye, which was purchased by Gatehouse, which then later merged with Gannett. But the Burlington Hawkeye is the oldest daily newspaper in Iowa and used to be a really strong newspaper, even 20 or 30 years ago, of a very strong, smaller community newspaper. And now, I mean, they just have practically nothing for staff. The editor is located out of state. I hear from people down there that they have just mistakes that are just so obvious, addresses that make no sense, that if you lived there, you would realize that that doesn't make any sense, that it would need to be corrected. And so I worry about that happening to some of the other daily newspapers under, if Alden Hedge Fund Group is successful in taking over the Lee newspapers. It's pretty concerning because it's hard to get that back. Now, there is an online, I think it's more of a Facebook group than anything else. There's an online news source that has sprung up to try to cover local news in Burlington, but that's not a substitute for a strong daily newspaper like the Hawkeye was. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I do encourage people to support their local media if they can. And also, like, as I mentioned yesterday on my website, to support some of the nonprofits that are producing good content. It's really, valuable for people. This is a work that doesn't appear in the larger newspapers like the Des Moines Register or even the Ames Tribune. And so it's important to keep that local coverage going.
Thanks for speaking up for it. Mm-hmm. And I guess really devoting your life to it.
Yes. Yes. Well, it does take up quite a lot of my time. I'm involved in a lot of things, but Bleeding Heartline definitely takes up more of my time, especially now that my kids are older.
Well, I'm glad that some of your time is spent with commentary on Capital Week. Thank
you. Yes, I enjoy that very much. Thanks.
And for those listeners who don't know, Capital Week airs on Monday evenings at 7, and you can hear it at noon, a replay at noon on Wednesdays. So you can listen to more of Laura talking about what's going on right now.
Yes, thank Dennis you. Hart and I always have a lot. There's always a lot going on, and unfortunately, we also are often talking about the latest news related to the coronavirus in Iowa, and that seems to be the story that never ends.
Well, thank you for being with us, and I think it's probably time to wrap it up.
Yeah, thanks, Susan.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, with co-host Gina McAndrews. Also appearing on today's show were Dan Chase of Ankeny Community Theater, Michelle Levi of Boone Community Theater, Laura Bellin of the blog Bleeding Heartland, and Mark Witherspoon, formerly advisor to the Iowa State Daily. Special thanks to our interim station manager, Mike Murphy, for engineering today's program. KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI, your community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Remember that you can hear today's programs online at khoifm.org and find links to our guests and information you heard
during this program. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.